Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, whatever time you are tuning in. Welcome to Homesteading and Gardening in the Suburbs. I'm Emma from Misfit Gardening. And this week we're talking about 10 things to get ready for winter because I want you, your homestead and your garden to be ready because like it or not, winter's coming. And I know everybody that's a Game of Thrones fan right now is probably nerding out. Yes, Team Stark. And not just because I love Sean Bean. I mean, I do love Sean Bean, but, you know, winter really is coming and it will be here before we know it. So let's get stuck in and talk about these things to get your homestead and your garden ready for winter. So number one, get canning and preserving your freshly harvested produce. Okay, I really can't stress this enough about preserving the extra and surplus that you have, because if you are picking up seasonal fruits and vegetables, they're often cheaper. So if you're buying in bulk, like if you're buying tomatoes or I don't know, peaches and stuff, if you're buying them by the bushel, it's going to be way cheaper for you to operate buying in the bushel than it is if you're just buying small quantities here and there. And one of the great things now is there's just so many of these food stands available. You know, there's like little farmers market things popping up all over the place. You know, they've got a lot of corn, some places have got tomatoes coming in, peaches, all that kind of stuff. And you know, if you're having a slow season, like my garden's just starting to kind of recover from some of the hot weather, although right now we're up in triple digits, you know, some of my harvests are not quite doing as well as I would expect them to be growing, but that's another reason why and another conversation that maybe I'll talk about in a later episode. But like right now, you know, we've got things that are all coming in and coming available at the farmers market. So one of the things about canning and preserving, and I didn't really realize this until I actually read cover to cover the USDA and their complete guide to home canning book. But if you properly prepare and can vegetables and fruits quickly after harvesting, then your home canned goods can actually be higher in nutrients like vitamins and minerals than the fresh produce in the grocery store. Think about that for a second, because we all know that, you know, cooking and stuff will actually, you know, reduce the levels of vitamins, especially because they're so easily broken down by the cooking process. But, you know, there's more in something that's gone through the whole process of being prepped and canned that you have on your pantry shelf than there is in that fresh produce that's available at the grocery store. I mean, when I read that, it just kind of blew my mind. But it makes sense because, you know, to be able to, you know, get things from, you know, it's coming out of the country, it's coming from Mexico, it's coming from China, it's coming from all sorts of places around the world. But to be able to be ripe by the time it gets to, you know, the shelf in the grocery store, these things have to be like picked before they're ripe. They're slow to ripe. They use chemical ripening agents. It's kind of crazy. But the longer it is from that produce being picked or harvested out of the ground before you eat it, the lower the levels of nutrients, vitamins, stuff like that, that are actually in there. And I don't know if you've ever noticed this, but if you're eating more from your garden and, you know, fresh produce and stuff, you might actually feel fuller quicker, like for eating less than what you might do at the grocery store. And I'd never really paid too much attention to that. But I noticed, because I've been eating a lot more from the garden recently, that I'm eating way smaller portions. I'm losing weight a lot more quickly. And, you know, I don't feel as hungry all the time. I feel like I have a lot more energy. And I'm pretty sure it's because these things are fresh out of the garden and there's a lot more nutrients. So there's something to be said about, you know, eating and getting your fruits and vegetables locally, and honestly, you can't get more local than your own backyard. I also would recommend to can some extra as well, because it's good to have, a little bit extra on hand, but it's also actually really quite lovely to share things that you've canned with friends and loved ones for the holidays, or just even if they're struggling, they're struggling, but they're kind of too proud to ask, or just because. I recently shared some pickled green beans that I had made, and that's probably going to be coming as a YouTube video pretty soon, actually, on how I made those. But I shared them with some friends, and they were blown away. They were like, "Where did you buy these?" And when I told them that I made them myself, they were really quite shocked. But they were even more shocked when I told them that everything that was in there was homegrown as well. So they were blown away by the gesture, but even more blown away that it was something that had been grown and made, and it was something that somebody had taken a lot of time over. That kind of brings me on to, preparing for the holidays and things. I mean, if you visit the thrift store, and some of them are open right now, I know that we're starting to open things back up here in the US, but I mean, I love going to the thrift store anyway, because I always pick up these really cool gadgets and tools that I use all the time on my homestead, like a double boiler, or just kind of pots and pans, utensils, stuff like that, that I use when I'm processing things like beeswax and stuff like that. And you can pick them up super cheap. But one of the other things that I love getting from the thrift store, and I probably have too many of them according to my husband, but it's those beautiful like wicker baskets. Or woven baskets, and you can pick them up really inexpensively. And you know what? If you pop in some shredded colored paper, some tissue paper, or even dry straw in that basket, you can, put your nice canned goods. Maybe you made some cookies or some biscuits or pudding, pies, whatever. You can pop them in there. You can wrap it up like the basket and everything with some florist cellophane or clear plastic, and finish it with a bow and give it to a friend or a loved one. And it looks really pretty, it looks really professional as well. And you know what? It cost a fraction of what it would if you were going to buy one of those fancy gift hampers. And you know what? You put a lot more effort into it, and that's what's kind of meaningful for people. There's just something so lovely about homemade gifts. And this year, we've challenged ourselves that everything that we're going to be giving to loved ones this year is going to be something that we have made ourselves. Now, some of these things are taking, a lot of time to make, because they're big projects. Like, I've got one for a family member that I've been working on since the beginning of the year. It's a lot of crochet. I mean, I love to crochet anyway, but this one's kind of been going on for a long time. But I know that when they open it up, they are going to freak out because they are going to love it. And, I always remember getting, hampers of stuff when I was at college from my granny, like little food things that I miss, like some of her chutneys, some of her pickles. And now that she's gone, I mean, it's one of the things that I really miss, and it's one of the things that I love about canning and making some of these things, is because I can feel that connection back with my grandmother and my granddad who've passed. And these are things that I love to do with them, and it's really nice to be able to pass on some of those skills to people who are also looking at how to do some of those things. So there's so much more that goes into the act of canning and sharing how to do some of this stuff. Speaking of canning, keep looking for canning supplies and pick them up as you are able to. So this is my number two on things to do to get ready for winter. So quart jars are good for soups and stews. You can, can them in those bigger jars and then kind of divvy them up between your family, and it's really good as a quick midweek meal. Pint jars are good for things like crushed tomatoes, canning meats or pickles. I will hook up in the description on how to can meat, pressure can it, because that's kind of a lot of what my husband and I do when we are able to pick up a good deal on meat. We can a bunch of it and then it's dead easy. You just kind of add it into, you know, whatever it is that you're cooking, and you know, it just makes things go a little bit quicker. My stepson's not, you know, very confident in the kitchen, but he's able to make things with the, you know, pre-canned meat and stuff. And, you know, we're not kind of worrying that he's not cooking things all the way through and is going to make himself sick with that. So that's a good tip as well. Half pint jars are good for things like salsa, jam or tomato paste. But my top tip is always pick up the extra lids. Doesn't matter if it's just the straight up lids or the lids in the bands. Like sometimes the bands rust and you have to kind of throw them out, but always pick up the extra lids. Check out things like farm supply stores, online garage sales, as well as grocery stores for your supplies. There is an online company that I've used and got jars and things from before. They're pretty good, and they're great for water bath cans. So I will make sure to put those in the description as well. Or actually, you can, I think they're already listed in the homesteading kit that is in the description. So check that out as well. All right, number three is get your canner gauge checked to make sure that it's working right. And for those of you that have kind of been reading things that I've posted about before, or you've listened to some of my other podcasts, especially about canning, you know, you can learn a bit more about that. But make sure that your gauge is working right. And this is so important if you have a pressure gauge on your pressure canner. If you have a rocker, obviously there's no gauge to check, but you want to make sure that that gauge is operating correctly, because that is what's telling you the pressure inside your canner. And if you are not operating at that right pressure, your canned goods are not going to be canned at the right pressure, and you're not going to get that heat all the way through. And that's so important to prevent like foodborne illnesses, okay? So it's really important to get that checked out. If you're here in the US, call up your local extension office and see if they offer that, or check out online. If you're not in the US and you have a pressure canner, do a Google search and see, you know, who's available and who can do those kind of checks on your canner, or, you know, maybe see about upgrading and getting a canner that is just a weighted canner and doesn't have a pressure gauge that's on there. If you're able to, get it booked in and get it checked. Also, now's a really good time before you start canning like a crazy person to check the seals on your pressure canner. Make sure that they're not dry, they're not brittle, they're not crumbling, or they're not split. If they are dry, brittle, crumbling, or split, order replacements and get them in place before you can, okay? Don't be operating your canner with a dodgy seal, because you're not going to be able to maintain that pressure. And I know that I'm kind of dogging on you right now about that, but sometimes you need a little bit of tough love, because if those seals are not right, your pressure's not right, and you run the risk of not canning your foods properly. Your foods inside those jars are not going to reach up to temperature, and I don't want you to get sick. Like, you don't want to get sick, and you don't want your family and your friends to get sick either, because, you know, if you read about canning and stuff, there are some pretty nasty bugs that can survive in there. So you have to can properly, you have to follow directions, and you have to make sure that you're operating at the right temperatures, especially for low acid foods, which are things like meats and veggies, okay? Like, this comes from a place of love. I mean, I've also just been in like more than a week of training for food safety, you know, at the work that I do. So this is kind of like forefront of the mind, okay? So make sure that your canner is in good operating order before you start, okay? All right, number four, plant your fall garden. Get some transplants if you're running behind. And by running behind, I mean that, you know, your first frost is kind of coming up relatively soon, check out things like your local nursery, farm supply stores, big box stores, and even local ads online. I mean, we've got like a local classifieds here in Utah, and people are selling transplants for your garden. Transplants are great for things like cabbages, broccoli, chard, cauliflower, things that, you know, can handle cooler weather, but you need them to kind of get established quickly to be able to produce before that, you know, weather really hits. You can also sow seeds for things like lettuces, radishes, spinach, oriental or Asian greens, so things like tatsoi, mitsuna, mustards, those kind of things, bok choy, baby leaf kale, beets and carrots. Okay, you want to get those things seeded and in the ground pretty soon. You don't want to be leaving it too late now, because we're already kind of middle of August. You definitely want to have these things in the ground by the end of August, to make sure that you have some level of a chance of a harvest. And that leads me on to number five, which is how you can extend that harvest a little bit longer to you know, help your fall garden give you a harvest through as that cool weather hits. Now, the great thing about season extension, particularly a mini hoop house with plastic, is that you can extend your growing season by an extra 6 weeks. So that's 6 weeks more of fresh produce that you can be using. And if you're really into extending your harvest and growing all season, I definitely recommend Elliot Coleman's book, The Four Season Harvest, I think it's called. It is such a great resource. It's all about growing undercover, you know, in a greenhouse or a polytunnel. Definitely check that out. I will hook that up into my gardening and homesteading toolkits, which I will put in the podcast description. So make a mini hoop house to cover your garden row or the raised bed. I've got both. I've got a large one that covers part of my test bed, but I've also got three smaller ones which cover three of the garden beds that I have in, you know, the main garden. And the reason why I only have three of them is because really there's only three that don't have a cattle panel trellis going over them, so they've got a much better fit. But also it's the three beds that are in the full sun even during winter, so I'm able to really capture and use that sunlight as it's going in. Now, each layer of plastic and frost protection that you're using is basically going to be moving that area that you've covered in your garden about as growing zone south. So, for example, if you're living in zone 5, one layer of plastic is going to put you at a zone 6. A second layer over your veggies is going to put them in a warmer region of zone 7. Now, you don't necessarily want to be going much more than two or three layers, because you're going to reduce the amount of light that's getting to your veggies, and you want to get as much light in there as possible, because, you know, during winter the sun's at a different angle and you've got a lower level of light coming in anyway. But to really succeed with kind of season extension, you have to use cool weather crops for best results, okay? Don't try to keep tomatoes and peppers growing over winter in a hoop house, okay? You're going to need some serious heat for that, which is expensive. And, you know, I really want to set you up for success here, so make an inexpensive hoop house for your raised bed. I will link up to my post about how I did that. I made one for about $50. So I will hook that up in the description. And also building another hoop house, I did a video for that one, so I will pop that in the description for the podcast as well. All right, number six is save seed, okay? You've probably figured out by now, if you've been listening to a few episodes, that I'm really into saving seeds, okay? I've got quite the seed stash. You know, you might see it on Instagram on a couple of posts. Like, I'm talking a lot about saving seeds, partly because I'm growing some unusual varieties, but also just to kind of build my own supply of seeds so I don't have to, you know, rely on getting them from somewhere else. Okay, I was so disappointed, really, and sad that I couldn't bring the seeds that I had saved in England and had been given to me from my grandmother when I moved to the US. Okay, I actually gave them to my dad. I gave some to my auntie who, you know, both of them grow, not quite to the extent that I grow fruits and vegetables, but they definitely garden and they're getting a lot of joy from them. But I'm really kind of kicking myself now that I've been in the US for some time. You know, I've since found out that there were ways that, you know, I could have brought them in, you know, appropriately through the right channels and stuff like that. So I wish that I'd kind of looked a little bit more into that. But because of that, you know, I'm making a solid effort to look for some of those varieties that I love to grow in England. And a lot of those varieties I'm now finding are available in the Pacific Northwest because the climate's very similar to what I was growing in the UK. So whenever I see those kind of varieties, I'm definitely, you know, snapping them up while I can and, you know, figuring out how to save seed from those plants. So, you know, I really encourage you to get into the habit of saving seeds. You know, there's lots of easy ones that you can be saving from. You know, get into the habit of saving seeds from your tomatoes, your eggplants, peppers, squashes, stuff like that. Fruiting plants, you know, beans, peas are so easy to save seed from. Especially if they're heirloom or OSSI or open source seed initiative and open pollinated varieties, you know, let a plant or two go to seed in your garden, you know, like lettuce or carrots and stuff, and then save the seeds from those. You can learn more about seed saving in one of the blog posts that I did, which I'll link up below, or you can get in on my easy seed saving course and get the lifetime access to all the updates. And I'm going to put the link in the description of the podcast for that as well, so you can get that as well if you're interested. Now, speaking of saving seeds, now's a really good time to check your seed stash, do a little inventory and see what you have and what you need to get more of, okay? I definitely recommend checking out the smaller and independent seed companies who've been running throughout the pandemic and they've still got seeds available to ship and restock. I've done two podcast interviews with two relatively local to me seed suppliers, but that doesn't mean that they just grow for, you know, kind of the Rocky Mountain region. You know, seeds will grow kind of across the US, so definitely check those out. One was Delectation of Tomatoes, and that was the last podcast episode that I did last week. And then a couple of months back, I did one with Julie from Giving Ground Seeds, and you can check that out as well. You know, there's a lot of these small, you know, small businesses that are operating and still getting out these great seeds, and they have a lot of diversity and a lot of availability of different varieties. So if you're looking for something new and, you know, you don't necessarily want to wait until the winter catalogs and things are coming through, then take a look at some of these smaller companies and get your seeds ordered. It's really good to be evaluating things like your garden journal now, and look at what grew well in your garden and what didn't. And that's tip number 8 for me, is really evaluate what's growing well and just what was terrible. And the plants that didn't grow well, you know, consider if you want to grow those, you know, again, and see whether it was, you know, the seed's just not good for your area, or whether it was like the weather or bugs or something else that kind of impacted how those grew, or swap those seeds with another gardener or a friend who's trying to grow. You know, you could even make your own mini seed bank and give that away as a gift. So you could share some of your seeds, put them in little baggies or little paper envelopes, maybe write the variety on there, some planting instructions, and, you know, give those to a beginning gardener. You can pop them in a big mason jar, like, you know, a garden in a jar, basically. actually. Maybe you can make like a little mini planting guide or something that goes with it so they know how to grow them. And you know, you can inspire somebody that you love or care about to get growing and taking ownership of their food supply too. You could also donate them to your local school or community garden if it's not something that's grown well for you in your garden. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be toast for, you know, another gardener in your region. So sharing is caring, I feel, especially when it comes to seeds. All right, number 9 is turn your compost heap. So if you've got a compost heap, you want to get everything in there mixed together and turned over now. You want to check it, make sure that it's nice and moist. Remember, it wants to be like a well-wrung out sponge. Check out the podcast about composting if you want to learn a little bit more. But we want to get these things broken down before winter comes, okay? And that's because we want to be spreading our compost on our garden. We want to be side dressing our plants growing in the fall garden. If you've still got, you know, summer crops growing in your garden like I do, like everything's kind of behind at the minute for me, things are just starting to take off now, but you want to be getting out there and putting a handful of compost around the base of those plants. I mean, I'm doing it every week, but I've got sandy soil and things get washed away very quickly in my garden. So, you know, just kind of take some notes and look at how well your garden's performing and you'll find a groove in doing this side dressing. But, you know, when it comes to compost, like, remember that compost helps correct so many problems in the soil. And that's what Dale and I kind of talked about during our interview and our podcast last week. We were talking about growing tomatoes. Like, you know, if you can get that soil right, everything else is golden. And there's a reason that they call compost gardeners gold, okay? So if you haven't started a compost heap, get one started as you pull plants out that have finished growing in the garden. It's super easy. And you can check out my podcast about composting or one of my previous blog posts if you're interested. And last but by no means least, and kind of related to soil, is if you've got trees on your property or nearby, start to think about getting some chicken wire and some wood stakes and building a leaf mold bin, okay? Leaf mold takes a long time to make. It takes at least a year to break down. But man, it adds a lot of rich humus to your soil and it helps improve the structure and the water retention of the soil. And the other great thing about leaves is you can use them as a mulch. You can cover your beds with them and help kind of protect them from the snow, the rain, all that good stuff. But if you are worried about pests harboring in that organic mulch over winter, then the best thing you can do is to create a leaf mold bin. And all that you really do is you just put 4 stakes in the ground, wrap it with some chicken wire and secure it, and then just fill it up with leaves. And what's going to happen is it's going to break down over the season and it's going to get smaller and smaller and smaller. And what happens is at the very bottom is you're left with this beautiful, like dark brown, almost black, crumbly material. And it doesn't have a lot of nutrients in it. It has some, but it's really good to use like as a mulch around your plants or just add it into your compost to kind of help add more humus. And the more humus and organic materials that you have in the soil, and you want to be getting around 20% for a really good garden soil, but it's those components that are going to help the bacteria flourish and grow in your garden soil, and it's going to help you retain water in the soil, so you're going to need to water less. Your plants are going to thrive, because if you remember when we talked about those tips to keep your garden growing, water is really key, okay? Your plants need water, having a good soil that's able to retain water is going to be key to helping them flourish. Well, that's it for this week. I hope you found this episode super helpful. Come on over to the Facebook group and let me know how your garden's growing. Until next time, I hope your garden grows beautifully and that your homestead is running smoothly and getting ready for winter. Until next time, bye-bye for now.